Long process hasn't even started.
I'd like to call to order the city council workshop meeting for Monday, February 6th at 6:30. Everybody, please stand for invocation. We're going to take a moment of silence to just ask for guidance for our city council for tonight. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. All right, 1.3 on our agenda, I'm sorry, 1.4 on our agenda is roll call. Everybody is present. Mayor Logan was unable to attend tonight. He is in Olympia testifying on behalf of the Mary Dice Committee on Broadband Issues. So, 1.5 on our agenda is citizen input. Does anybody, is there any citizens that would like to come to the podium and speak? I'm not seeing anybody. We'll move on to 2.0 on the agenda is approval of the agenda. Would anybody like to make a motion for the approval of the agenda?
I'll make a motion.
Second.
It's been made and seconded. All in favor? Say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Against? It's been passed. 3.0 on our agenda is our current business. 3.1, our annual report from Adams County Pet Rescue, and Nakaya Grant is here to present for us.
Hello, everybody. We've had a very busy year this, in 2016. You see, it's easier to look here than with my glasses. We had about a little more than last year, 2015, city intake. We had 335 animals come through our doors. I wasn't sure this year, for 2016, if we'd have more rabbits and more chickens, because the city can have, you know, they can have up to three. But we only had one chicken and two or three rabbits come through, so I was pretty excited about that. And our city dog numbers were 225, 26. City cats, 97 come through. These numbers, I put just total numbers, they're owner surrenders and strays that come through. We had a few birds, parakeets, that kind of thing come through. So over, all in all, it was pretty, what we pretty much expected from the city animals this year. We had a great number, 89 that were returned to owner. One thing we've still liked, what we're finding out, people still don't know we're here. They're seeing our dogs, their dogs on Facebook and that kind of thing, and Othello yard sale. We'd like to get that changed, so people think of us when their animal goes missing right off, instead of us holding it for a few days, or, you know, even we had one for 2 weeks that they just didn't think to come out, that their dog might be there. Total county intake is quite a bit higher by probably 150 dogs from last year. County cats were pretty high. Total dogs this year, we had 899 dogs. And to put that in perspective, Grant County Animal Outreach, their total intake was right around 2,000 dogs. So population base wise, we're not that far behind them, really. We have quite a few dogs. We've broken our intake numbers and outcome numbers into city, county, and other. Other is everything outside of the county. I didn't put those numbers in. They're fairly low. But we do get a few coming in from other areas as our reputation grows for actually getting dogs adopted and cats adopted. Total return to owner, which was actually pretty nice, 160 dogs. I think we only had one cat that was returned to owner. Cats are just a little harder to pick up and find. Total died and euthanized, that looks high, 66. I almost had a heart attack when that presented, that number presented itself to me. But then I realized most of those numbers are sick cats. And people finding little feral cats, newborn cats, that kind of thing, that just aren't going to make it. So the majority are cats. Total transfers that we did this year, most of those are cats. We adopted very few cats out. It's just the nature of the beast here in our area. We did 455 transfers. We had total adoptions were 515. Grant County, I think they did 800 adoptions. So we're right up there with them. I mean, I'm pretty proud of that. One of the things we did 2015, we had the trap neuter release in October. We're seeing the effects of that this year. We've heard from people that feed cats, and from what we've seen, there are less sick cats running around and coming to us and being taken to the vet and being euthanized because they're so sick. I don't know if you've noticed that there's less feral cats around or not. We would like to do another trap neuter release this year. Animal House had helped with that. They're no longer part of our operation or helping us at all. So now we have to find, go after some funds, we have to get some traps, and hopefully we'll be able to come back to you guys and let you know we'd like to do another one this year. I think it really helped. Our city pet rescue vaccination clinic that we do here in the parking lot has really made a difference. We've done it, was it 2 or 3 years now? The vet was saying this fall that she thought we had less parvo cases come through her doors, which is great. Let's see. We also have a new dog exercise area that people from the town, from city, county can come use. We were given funds from Rotary, Lions, and Caring Neighbors. Ground froze right before we could get our sign up, but people will be welcome to bring their dogs out. We just have to have proof of vaccinations, and they need to be currently altered. So once we get the sign up and going this spring, when the ground thaws, we'll be up and running on that. Hopefully we'll see you guys with some of your animals out there. I think that's it in a nutshell. If you have any questions.
Any questions?
Thank you, Kyle.
Yep.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. 3.02 on our agenda is parks and rec fees. That's Amy.
Good evening. I'm here to talk with you guys tonight about the parks and rec fees for the upcoming 2017 year. I recently met with the Parks and Recreation Council Committee and had a conversation with them about some of the topics that have come up during this season as far as planning for the financial future for the department. Two of the main conversations that we talked about were around pool fees with the added cost of running the pool due to the minimum wage increase. We also talked about the Little League fees, which we've pretty much solved that issue. That's just waiting to get put onto the official resolution. And then lastly, we discussed adding a vendor fee for Lions Park. So we'll start with the pool. I'm going to talk a little bit, and then if any of the committee members want to jump in and share anything, that would be great. We have $1.53 per hour increase that we've applied to the pool wages across the board from manager down to concession stand worker. That is a substantial increase when you talk about having 12 people on at a time, and that raising the minimum wage to $11 this year is potentially going to impact the budget by about $15,000. That's based on the 9,600 hours that were worked at the pool last year, and just a simple calculation with that $1.53 increase. That increase was not accounted for during the budget season because the law hadn't gone into effect during that time. So we will make an adjustment at the end of the year for any extra spending that happens in those line items to compensate for the unplanned change in wages. There's nothing we can really do to get around the wages. The only caveat in the law is if you have staff that's under the age of 16, and we don't think it's probably a terrific idea to employ lifeguards that are much younger than the age that we already have at 16, then it's probably just for the sake of across the board, just call that the 16-year-old rule, so we don't have any employees working under the age threshold. We talked about some of the ways that we could increase the pool wages or fees. So there's the admission fee getting into the pool. Right now it's $4 for kids and seniors and $5 for adults. These prices were increased recently to what they are now. And as far as they compare to other prices around the region, they're middle to high, I would say. Moses Lake is a difficult beast to compare ourselves to because of their facility being so much larger than ours is. But they only charge $8 to get into their water park, and we charge $5 to get into our swimming pool. So we don't have to be in direct competition with them. But looking around the area to what other attractions there are has to bear into some meaning. And our prices are just a shade higher, about a dollar higher than Connell's. We also talked about raising the swim lesson fees. So we had about 300 kids participate in swim lessons last year. We currently charge $31 for a session of swim lessons. And even if we raised that $3 or $4 per kid, I mean, then that's $1,200 at $1,500 when the goal that we're trying to reach is $15,000 for trying to come up with a deficit. I do understand that every little bit helps, but we did think that maybe we could take a look at what this year brings, and we have some good financial data to stand on when we do make an increase, and knowing pretty definitively what's coming down the line as far as wage increases goes, because the law is laid out so particularly for us, we can make a more educated decision about how and where the best places to increase prices for the pool are. Do any of you three want to talk about the pool at all?
Just reiterate what Amy said is that we did look at it, and it was like this year it's kind of a surprise. We didn't know quite how much it was going to impact our budget, and we decided that it would be a good time to allow us a year to see where we're at the end of next year, and then we can make a more educated plan for decreasing our portion of the budget, because we know it operates at a deficit, and we try to keep that deficit to a minimum. But
and the only way to do that, the only way to minimize the deficit, is to increase the price to generate more revenue. But we already made a rate increase, and we're into that rate increase today. It doesn't seem fair just because of the we didn't feel it seemed fair enough to go back and make another increase.
Yeah, but we just adjusted it either last year or the year before.
People are just settling into that.
Last year or the year before. Mm-hmm.
And they're just settling into that, so we're hoping that it's not going to hit us that bad, but we're just going to have to wait and see at the end of the year. But it's a community pool. It's for the community. We're going to need community input on whether or not, how far will the community be willing to go to have this pool? I mean, how much money do they want to spend on it?
And another thing I got to say is Amy's made huge strides in bringing the concessions prices and not prices, but the spending in the concessions. She's done a phenomenal job. Last year, our spending versus our purchases was just spot on.
Yeah, the concession stand definitely can't carry the pool by any means, but
it did
do a job to sort of help throw a little bit back in, which is the intention.
Well, and it definitely paid for itself and a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So
it was
a great job.
It didn't lose money. So anyway, go on.
So that's kind of where we were at with the pool, is that we're just going to have a year of, so we can have some good solid, a couple of years of data, and then see where that takes us.
Eventually, in 2022, we'll be paying $15 for minimum wage. So I guess, in my opinion, it would be nice to make a couple of very strategic increases once or twice throughout that time period, as opposed to every year them not knowing what to count on for prices or not knowing what things are going to cost. So I just wanted to make sure that I came tonight to share what we talked about at the meeting, and then to get any information from you other folks that weren't able to be there, so that before I come and make the, you know, request to have a formal motion made, that everybody has a chance to weigh in on this, because it is potentially going to be an even larger than normal loss, which, again, you know, like John said, at a certain point, that will have to be evaluated. Is there a breaking point on that? But do you guys have anything?
Well, do you know what the attendance for the pool last year was outside of?
No, we didn't track it very well. This year, we have much better methods in place to track season pass holders. So we have a lot of season pass holders, and they weren't kept track of last year. So when I say how many people are in the pool, I can tell you how many paid patrons came into the pool on a given day, but I can't tell you how many people frequented it, or if, you know, person A purchased a season pass and used it 4 times versus person B used it 97 times or anything like that. So we have some systems in place this year to make sure that we track the attendance of free children, children who don't pay to get in based on their age, season pass holders, and their frequency of visiting the pool, and I'll have a better idea of that. I mean, that, to be honest with you, there were some days where it was so full you couldn't find a space on the grass to sit, and then there were other days where, I mean, the lifeguards cleaned the same deck 15 times just trying to keep busy doing things. We had a very mild summer last year, so I felt like it was a slow year, but when I went back and looked, we were actually pretty busy last year. We had more pool rentals than we had in previous years, and we had a little higher attendance for swim lessons than we had in the previous year. So I don't have a great answer for you, though, on total attendance for the pool.
Well, the vendor fees, we decided to charge them $50 a week, right? Because they were charging $100 for the season.
So moving down to the vendor fees, this has come up from the Snow Shack, which is that little orange snow cone shack that sells snow cones at the park. With the city managing the facility this year, they were curious what their future looked like as far as being able to sell the snow cones at the park. That particular product is a non-compete for me. I don't sell snow cones in the concession stand, so I personally don't have an issue with it. But sometimes if you don't have some kind of boundary or guidelines set in place, then you open yourself up to not being able to say no or not being able to turn away other people. And I don't necessarily foresee it being like a flea market, but at the same time, I'd hate for it to just be full of all of these different vendors and then taking some of the ability for the city to make some of that money back from that concession stand as well. So we also have tournament weekends to take into consideration. So when we have out-of-area tournaments come into town, they often will bring in other vendors that sell bats, gloves, t-shirts, things like, you know, sporting related. And again, previously, when other groups in the community were managing the facility, they had the right to charge whatever they wanted. They could say no to whomever they wanted. Well, now that the city's managing that facility, that sort of puts the ball into our court as far as what it is we want to do when it comes to managing that facility for ourselves. So on that vendor note, in order for anybody to be a vendor in the city of Othello, they have to have a business license. So there is an original $80 business license fee for the year, unless they enact their business license from July on. Then they get a half break at $40. That first part of the year, which will be the Little League portion of the year, right off the bat is $80 that they'll have to pay in order to sell anything in the city of Othello anyways. We talked about a $50 vendor fee, $50 per week. That would be the same fee whether it was during the Cal Ripken League or if it were during the off season later on in the year where we just had softball tournament come into town. We would run the week Monday through Sunday. So for example, for the Cal Ripken League, they would have the ability to come and sell whatever they were selling Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, while there's people there in the park, they could come on Sunday, we wouldn't necessarily control that, but there wouldn't be anybody there, so I don't think that you would have people doing that. And then a weekend tournament would be different because there wouldn't be anybody in the park Monday through Thursday, and then Friday, Saturday, or Saturday, Sunday, depending on how the tournament rolled down, those vendors would pay the same fee. Tournaments bring in more people in one setting and usually from out of town, so the customer base is slightly different. So I think that we all sort of felt like it was fair to say $50 per week on a Monday through Sunday time frame, regardless of what the event was. But again, I brought that here for the rest of you to discuss.
It works both ways. It works for the vendor as well for the city, because the vendor now has a right to be there and selling his wares, and somebody else couldn't just come in and move him away. He's already paid for the right to be there, so you don't have any arguments going on. You know, you have people paying for their right to be in the park selling their wares.
Are we going to designate areas for them to set up or give them specific areas when they pay for their...
I think you sort of have to, yeah. And for the safety issue, it's relatively constrictive. There's not a lot of places that you could set them up, especially if they have a need for power. Mm-hmm. So that also does help sort of limit the amount of people we have in the park.
Well, and one of the other issues we looked at was that right now, the way that it's set up in the city rules is that the snow shack just had to have a permit. So as it sits, anybody with a permit could just come and set up in the park. So, or not a permit, a business license. Could just come and set up in the park. And you want to be able to control what kind of businesses are setting up in the park. So I think the $50 a week is fair. I think the per week is fair, because then if they want to take a week off, they don't have to pay for their permit for that week. Or I know we did not discuss, and this just occurred to me, we did not discuss possibly for those like the snow shack that may want the permit for the entire summer, because I think it worked out to be what, $600.
That was the figure when we were figuring at $100 per week, because we figured about a 6-week season for the Cal Ripken League.
Okay.
And then there will be weeks where there's maybe nothing at the park. So,
but there even could be a possibility of setting something up so that if they bought a permit for the entire season, the entire summer season, that maybe they'd get a slightly discounted rate. But
and at the minimum, we'll have to draw up some legal documents with Kelly to make sure that the city's not liable for any graffiti or damage that happens for the snow. I mean, I'm using the snow sack as an example just because they're really the reason that this conversation started in the first place. But they leave their trailer in the park Monday through Saturday, and sometimes they don't even take it out on Sunday. If they have another event somewhere else, they may move it. But there's times where we're mowing around it, you know, it's there nonstop. They use the city's power when they're there, and there is a little bit of responsibility on the city's part for them being on site, and it's really not feasible to have them driving in and out of the park, and truthfully, I wouldn't want them driving in and out of the park every day just for the sake of the grass. So it's nice if they came in.
Not only the grass, but the sprinklers. That's what.
Well, there's a pretty clear path if they're out to the street if they stay on, but I could just see that turning into a mud hole real quick if we had them trucking in and out every day. So.
Well, great. So how did you come up with $50 a week? I just out of curiosity.
It was a round number. That
seems very low to me. When I had my concession stand, I was paying $75 to $125 per day to set it up.
Per day. Well, we started off at 100 and we decided to go down.
Yeah, we did. We started at 100.
I was kind of like, that seemed high. Just because we're a small community, and basically that's, you know, for the people of the community to go out and make a little bit, you know, and I don't really care what we decide to do, but.
Well, and we want to.
I just think it seems awful low.
That's. the snow cone shack, I mean, they're going to do a fairly good business, I think, when there's a lot of groups there and everything, but if they want to stay there the whole summer, I'm sure that they're getting some business, but we didn't want to make it so high that it was, yeah.
Well, it should be a summer pass, like $250 for the summer.
Something like that.
Well, that's what I was talking about.
Or $275 for the summer.
You get a slightly, you know, discounted rate.
If you know you're going to be there a lot, okay, $275 instead of.
For the baseball season, because if you say summer, they're going to be set up at the 4th of July parade. I mean,
They're going to have to pay that anyway, aren't they? They're going to pay that.
Well, 4th of July is a completely different thing where they would pay, 4th of July charges $250 for their one-day vendor fee for the 4th of July. And that's run, and that becomes again where a third party's managing the facility. So those funds go straight to the Chamber of Commerce. They basically get the facility to manage and then they operate in that.
So if the snow cone shack wanted to stay out at the ballpark, it could pay the $50 or whatever we set our fees at. But if they want to move into the event area and be right there with the vendors, they'd have to go through.
Yeah, 4th of July, they wouldn't be able to stay down there because that's where the fireworks are. But
Well, they'd have to.
There are other things like CBHA's deal and things like that.
And pay for the.
You just charge the chamber then. It pays $50.
Well, that's a little different because there's a huge number of people that are going to be there specifically for that event, and that's what they're paying for.
That's what I said at the beginning, that snow shack, I mean, they put out some snow cones. I've been to the games, and I mean, it's lined up all the time. So that's why we had started up at $100. And then, because they were charging $100 for the season. I thought it was $100 for a week, and then we kind of stuck to $100. And then I asked that question again, and Amy says, no, it's $100 for the season. Not $100 a month, so that's when we decided to go down $50.
So that's like $18 a day. At 100, it's like if during Little League, if they're there for 6 days of the week ish, it's $18 a day that they have to be there if you break it down. But then for the weekend vendors who are there for only 2 days, that's $50 a day.
I think for kicking it off at $50 sounds about right. Yeah. Our size town, we can reevaluate another next year or whatever.
It allows us to control who's there. Mm-hmm. And what they're selling and where they set up and those types of things, but we don't want to handcuff them so that they're not making any profits.
Plus,
we still want them to come, too. Yeah.
This is our first year of being in control of the activities that are going to be going on, and you know we're doing that at a loss. But I personally would like to see it be successful. And then move on from this point to something really spectacular. And Amy's been doing a great job, so.
You know, it's a number we just kind of pulled out of the air, but, you know, we can always reevaluate it next year and see where it takes us.
Okay.
All right. Any other questions?
Thank you, Amy. No problem. Thanks, guys.
All right. Number four on our agenda is committee reports. Does anybody have any committee reports? I think we just went over our committee report with Amy. But did any other committees meet? Then I was asked by Wade to include a new business section.
Yeah.
He has some information for us.
I thought about this tonight while I was waiting on the meeting. I thought, well, I've got all the information that you guys asked for on the engineer position for the city. Well, not at all, but I've got a good update, I think, for you. So you guys had asked me a month or so ago to look at that and see what it would look like. And so I called a couple of city managers to see what they had, and I also went online, wealth of information there as far as what we possibly could have for our city. It looks like just the job description basically says engineer with a professional engineer certificate, so they can do stuff and expand from there. And so I went and looked at a salary, you know, Association of Washington Cities has a salary thing you can look at. And for our size town and what we're looking at, I think Spencer and I looked at it, it's about $80,000, $85,000 for salary and then another 30 or so for benefits. So about $110,000, $115,000 is what it cost us. So before that, I'd already looked at what services we could pull out of Barella to pay for that. And I think, given what they would do, would be stuff like inspections, looking at plans, you know, street plans and other plans from contractors, those kind of things. We could probably glean that from Barella. And so I'm hoping it would be a wash to hire this person. And so I looked at job descriptions also. So I've got job descriptions. I've got information I need. So I think I'm ready to proceed forward, if that's what you guys want me to do. And the next month or two, I'll try and get something and get, you know, advertise, a couple of different places we can advertise. And I don't think we need to go through an agency for this, because I don't believe so. I think we have the knowledge to know what we want.
So we have the money in the budget plus whatever we'll save from Barella?
It's what we would pull from, correct me if I'm wrong, Spencer, but it's what we would pull from Barella over the course of that time in those fees.
Another thing, we'd be able to, this cost would be borne not just by general.
Oh, this is the protections that are. Yep. Uh-huh. So. What were Barella's fees for last
year, sorry?
No. What were Barella's fees last year?
You know, it's hard. It's hard to say because last year they did a lot of work that was unique to specific grants, work that we wouldn't have our new person do. So Barella does a lot of work on specific projects and then just general engineering. So I don't have a split out. I could bring that in back.
We couldn't really quantify exactly how much it was, but just this, our sense of.
We could if we dug.
We could, but I think we didn't.
You got two different types of spending that goes on with engineering and the engineering costs. You got budget engineering costs, what you pay for them to do budget work, okay, that Public Works does through the budget. Then you have project engineering costs, right. And like what Barella has charged us, right, on the $1.6 million First Avenue project. They're charging us almost 10% to do the engineering for that project.
And that engineer we have would not be doing that. That's what Varela would still be doing, no, is that piece.
Yeah, they'd be over, yeah, they'd be checking out all the paperwork, all the.
They'd be doing asphalt engineering, for instance, for First, as we're doing the stuff for that for 14th, like previous engineer did. You know, it was a lot of money. They'd still be doing that. But the good news is we would have professional engineer looking that stuff over, and some, you know, minor little changes, whatever he might, or she might handle that.
I think he could cost down by, you know, a
that's
percentage.
Not my
if
point.
It was a $300,000 engineering project, I think he could at least knock off
$30,000
worth of costs associated with,
right,
that.
There's inspection costs and everything else, that some of which we passed on to contractors, some of which we bore ourselves. That piece we would keep in-house. We think he or she might could generate, you know, other projects for us as they got their feet on the ground. There's all kinds of stuff. I think, as you guys know, that's why you wanted me to do it.
Yeah.
And they could be doing. Plus, just the expertise. I can't tell you how many times I have to, you know, call Barella for a question on something that I could just reach out and touch an engineer. So the convenience piece is nice for me and for staff and for Public Works to have that on board. And I think it'd be value gained to have. And, you know, I think we're at the point, remember, a couple of years ago we talked about this and said, not sure we're there yet. And last year I started looking at it real hard. And then this year, when you guys brought it up, I said, yes, I think we're ready.
We're on that threshold of moving up to a different
yeah,
city.
Yeah.
You know, once we have that 10,000 mark, we're in a different category.
Right.
And we are going to have to start looking at having some of these professional
great
positions.
Yep. So,
in-house.
Well, if I bring you a set of plans. If we hire an engineer and I bring you a set of plans, so he's not going to review them, we're going to send them to Barella, right?
I'm not sure. Okay, I'm not sure.
The first person. He yeah. would be the first person
that's
to look at.
Yeah, what's his time? I mean,
yeah, so I think that
but what's he gonna
plan
do?
Reviews, I believe, yes, Angela, I think he'd be doing that. But don't hold me to anything. I'm still looking at that piece of it. But according to job description, that's the kind of stuff they do.
Because if he's going to do that, we're going to save a lot of money. Because
right.
my engineer to him, if he's going to review them, there's big money to be saved.
Now we'll still have a, you know, we'll have to look at our fees for that kind of stuff. You know, the different. And I don't know. Travis could probably help me out there.
He's a civil engineer with a professional engineering degree.
That's what I'm looking
with
for.
A PE after his name. Him and Travis will be able to sit down.
review the plans, and do the interaction with the builder, whoever's the developer.
Right.
And just, really, there wouldn't be any reason to go to Varela.
I don't think so, but again, I'm not going to commit to anything until really get...
If the city engineer wanted to go to Public Works and say, okay, I need a guy to watch these guys do this and have that done, you know, work with them to get this completed and be the eyes for us, that's how simple it would be.
Right, that's what we think, too. It would help the developers develop projects, and I don't know if Travis has anything to add on that.
The only thing I was going to say is the plan review stuff is cost recovery. So in addition to the city using an engineer in-house, we would also be able to save the applicant's money coming in the door. So not only would the city save money, but the developers would be encouraged to do more because they save money as well.
The turnaround time on that kind of project would also be probably a lot faster.
Probably, yeah.
How do you feel about it? You feel pretty good about getting the support?
Yeah, you know,
somebody being able to make the decisions? Yeah.
You know, I think it would be very similar to going from a part-time planner to a full-time planner. There are pros and cons. There's going to be additional cost to the city. But the question is, if your priority is to improve services and, you know, the response time and cut down on review time, you know, it seems like it would be the logical way to go. Varela and Associates, I have to be clear, Varela and Associates is by far the best consulting engineering firm I have ever dealt with. Whether or not that necessarily is a large stick to measure by, I can't say, but they do excellent work. But they also, I've seen some of the bills that reflects the quality of the work that we get from them, so.
Okay. Anyway, that's what I got. I'll keep you guys informed as we move forward.
Great, thank you, Wade.
Yep.
All right. Well, I believe that concludes our workshop meeting. So I'll close the meeting at 7:07.